This program is provided by lawyer Kyung Jin Kim.
March 27, 2026. I want you to picture the scene for a second. We're at the Beijing Zhongguancun Forum.
Oh, yeah. A huge event.
Massive, right?
Yeah.
This is bustling technology conference in China. You've got bright screens everywhere, executives rushing from panel to panel, vendors shouting about the future. But over on one quiet side of the venue, like away from all the flashing lights, there's this group of hospital IT staff.
Huddled in a corner, probably.
Exactly. They're huddled together, and they're passing around this document like it's, I don't know, a top secret blueprint for a bank vault.
Yeah, and in the medical tech world, it kind of was.
Right. The title of this highly anticipated paper is The Expert Consensus on the Application and Treatment of Medical Artificial Intelligence in Healthcare Institutions, the 2026 edition.
And that specific document landing was an absolute earthquake for the industry. I mean, it literally changes everything about how doctors and hospitals interact with software.
Which brings us to our mission for this deep dive. Today, we are exploring how hospitals are actually dealing with the chaotic, incredibly expensive, and highly risky reality of bringing artificial intelligence into the doctor's office.
Because it's not a simple process anymore.
No, not at all. And we're drawing this entirely from a massive analysis provided by former lawmaker Kyung Jin Kim. We're going to unpack why adopting AI in healthcare isn't just about, you know, plugging a new computer into the wall. It has become this massive regulatory and financial puzzle that most of us don't even see when we walk into a clinic.
It really requires a huge shift in perspective. Like,
yeah.
Former lawmaker Kyung Jin Kim's analysis makes it very clear that the old way of doing business is just dead.
Because, I mean, for a long time, buying medical tech, even early medical AI,
mm-hmm.
was kind of like buying a toaster.
A toaster. Yeah, I can see that.
Right. Like, you evaluate it at the store, you pay for it, you plug it into the wall, it just works. It does the one thing it's supposed to do.
Mm-hmm.
You put bread in, you get toast out.
Simple, predictable. Mm-hmm.
Exactly. But this new Chinese consensus document proves the toaster era is completely over. Now, bringing AI into a hospital is much more like hiring a team of unpredictable genius interns.
That is a terrifying thought for a hospital administrator.
Right. Because they might do brilliant work and catch a disease a human missed, or they might make a catastrophic mistake when you aren't looking.
And what makes this 2026 expert consensus so critical is the sheer weight behind it. I mean, it was signed by experts from over 40 different Chinese institutions.
Wow, 40.
Yeah, including major players from places like the Tsinghua University Changgong Hospital. So this document is essentially the very first time all the practical required steps for a hospital to adopt AI have been put into one single place.
So it's like a concrete playbook.
Exactly. It takes the abstract theory of AI safety and turns it into a mandatory to-do list for hospitals.
Well, let's open up this rule book then, because the contents force a massive change in how these hospitals operate. The consensus establishes four main principles. And the very first one, like sitting way above everything else, is safety and compliance.
It is priority number one.
Right. It's ranked higher than clinical utility, higher than data quality, and even higher than accountability.
Which tells you exactly what hospital administrators are most afraid of today. I mean, the primary concern is no longer, you know, whether the AI can diagnose a rare disease 10% faster than a human doctor.
Right. The shiny new feature isn't the point.
No. The primary concern is whether the AI is going to break the law, leak a patient's private data, or, God forbid, actively harm someone on the operating table.
And to prevent that, the consensus mandates a structural change that sounds, honestly, incredibly burdensome. It says that every single hospital must create a multidisciplinary committee.
And we aren't just talking about a couple of computer programmers sitting in a basement server room.
No. This committee has to include the clinicians using the tool, the IT personnel, the legal staff, and ethics reviewers. And they have to review every single AI tool before the hospital is allowed to adopt it.
And it doesn't stop there.
Right. They have to continuously reevaluate it after it's implemented.
That continuous aspect is the major hurdle. The relationship with the software doesn't end when the hospital writes the check to the vendor. It's like it's an ongoing interrogation.
But wait, if I'm a hospital administrator and some AI company is selling me a finished, polished software product, why do I need an entire squad of my own employees just to check their work?
Because the risk is on you now.
But like, if you buy a car, you don't hire a mechanic to rebuild the engine before you drive it off the lot. It feels like a building inspection where you don't just trust the architect, you force your own electrician, plumber, and structural engineer to sign off on every single brick.
Yeah.
Why is the hospital suddenly doing all that heavy lifting instead of the tech company?
Well, if we look closely at former lawmaker Kun Jin Kim's analysis, it all comes down to liability. The hospital's first question when evaluating a new AI isn't actually, how good is this?
It's who gets sued.
Exactly. The very first question is, who takes the blame when it makes a mistake? Prior to this consensus, the workflow in hospitals was incredibly disjointed.
How so?
Well, the IT department would evaluate the tech based on, like, server space. They'd buy it. The doctors would eventually learn how to click the buttons, and if the software broke or a patient was misdiagnosed because the AI missed a tumor, no one knew who was accountable.
Oh, I see. Was it the doctor's fault for trusting the machine or the IT department for buying it?
Right, or the vendor for building it poorly. So this new multidisciplinary committee forces all those different departments to sit in a room and agree on accountability before the tool ever touches a patient.
Okay, so it's a mechanism for spreading the risk and making sure everyone knows who goes to court if things go wrong. But the fact that they are so worried about mistakes, that kind of leads to the next major problem. Why are these mistakes happening more often now? Like, why do we need this massive committee when we didn't need one 10 years ago?
That's because the technology itself has fundamentally changed. We aren't dealing with simple calculators or fixed algorithms anymore.
Right.
There was this recent analysis from the Information Professional Committee of the China Hospital Association, specifically an article by Zhang Lai that detailed the shift perfectly. We have moved from old AI to what is called agentic AI.
Agentic meaning autonomous agents. Because in the old days, AI was basically a straight line.
Exactly. Fixed input, fixed output.
Yeah. You scan an X-ray into the computer and it outputs a bone density score. But agentic AI independently decides its next actions.
Yes, on its own.
Like, if it sees something weird on the X-ray, it might autonomously decide to open the patient's electronic health record, search for their blood test results, and cross-reference their medications. It invokes other tools by itself.
Which is incredibly powerful for a busy doctor, but also deeply, deeply unpredictable. A paper published recently in a major international digital medicine journal coined a term for this that captures the fear perfectly. They called it UNDCS.
UNDCS. Unbounded, non-deterministic clinical software.
It's a mouthful.
It really is.
Yeah.
Let's break that down for anyone who doesn't speak computer science.
Yeah.
Essentially, it means that because these tools are often powered by large language models, you know, the same technology behind modern chatbots, they do not behave like a standard calculator.
Right. They aren't deterministic.
Yeah. If you type 2 plus 2 into a calculator 100 times, you get 400 times. That is deterministic. Mm-hmm. But these new AI models are non-deterministic. If you ask them to diagnose the exact same set of patient symptoms twice, they might give you completely different answers.
We call those hallucinations.
Exactly. So you cannot test this kind of software statically. You can't just run it through a checklist once and say, cool, it's safe forever.
Because you cannot test something that constantly changes its mind. The solutions the industry is proposing to handle this are incredibly complex.
Like what?
Well, they use techniques like red teaming, where a hospital hires specialized teams to deliberately try and break the system or trick the AI into giving bad medical advice.
Wow, so actively attacking their own software.
Yeah, and they talk about setting up digital guardrails or using RG, retrieval augmented generation.
RG. That forces the AI to constantly double-check its answers against a verified external medical database before it speaks to a doctor, right?
Exactly. And there is even a push for multi-agent cross-verification.
Which means having one completely separate AI whose only job is to check the homework of the first AI.
Prima.
It sounds incredibly futuristic, but also just exhausting and chaotic for the human beings trying to manage it. And if you can't just run it through a standard lab test, how do hospitals actually figure out if it works on real patients?
They use something called a silent trial. A major Nature Health review recently looked into this testing method. They started by gathering 891 different studies on medical AI testing over the last decade.
891 studies? That's a lot of data.
It is, but when they filtered for rigorous, high-quality analysis, they had to whittle that massive number down to just 75 valid studies.
Just 75? Wow. Let me explain how a silent trial works, because it's fascinating. The hospital takes a new AI and installs it quietly on their servers. The AI starts analyzing real patients coming into the emergency room. It reads their charts, looks at their scans, and makes its diagnosis.
But, and this is the key part, the actual human doctors treating the patients never see the AI's predictions.
Right. The software runs completely silently in the background. It doesn't affect patient treatment at all. It just generates data so researchers can go back later and see how the AI would have performed compared to the human doctor.
It creates a safe sandbox.
But out of those 75 rigorous studies you mentioned, the vast majority of them only checked if the AI's silent predictions matched historical data. They didn't check if the doctors actually trusted the AI or how it fit into the loud, chaotic workflow of a real emergency room.
Yeah, that's the flaw.
Testing an AI in a silent trial sounds like testing a car's engine in a pristine laboratory. Like, you can confirm the engine spins, but you never actually put the car on a highway to see how it handles traffic, bad weather, or other drivers.
The laboratory environment strips away the human element, which is usually where the system breaks down. And this is particularly dangerous because of those autonomous cascading errors we talked about with agentic AI.
Cascading errors.
Yeah, think about a chain reaction. If an autonomous agent makes a tiny, almost invisible mistake in step one of a diagnosis, and then it automatically executes steps 2, 3, and 4 based on that flawed first assumption, tracing the origin of that error after the fact is an absolute nightmare.
Oh, man.
Right. In a silent trial where no human is interacting with the software in real time to say, wait, that doesn't look right, you might miss that cascading failure completely.
So if safely testing this new, unpredictable AI requires red teaming, multi-agent cross-verification, multidisciplinary committees, and these complex real-world trials, that sounds unbelievably expensive.
It is.
We're talking about hiring specialized lawyers, ethics reviewers, and IT security teams just to maintain one piece of software. Who can actually afford to do all of this?
Well, that brings us to the David versus Goliath dynamic of modern healthcare. Former lawmaker Kung Jin Kim's analysis highlights a framework called the HAIRA model to explain this resource divide.
HAIRA, H-A-I-R-A.
Exactly. It stands for Healthcare AI Governance Readiness Assessment. It was built by reviewing dozens of different AI governance frameworks published globally over the last 5 years.
So the HAIR model essentially grades a hospital, right?
Mm-hmm.
It breaks hospital readiness down into 7 distinct domains, things like data governance, model verification, clinical integration, risk management, and so on.
Correct.
And it ranks hospitals on a scale from level 1. Which means they're just reacting to problems as they happen, all the way up to level 5, which is the leading stage where they are proactively running training exercises for AI failures.
And the crucial rule of the HAIR model is that a hospital must level up evenly across all 7 domains. You cannot be a level 5 in data governance, but a level 1 in risk management.
Think of it like building a house, right? If your roof and walls are heavily fortified, but your foundation is made of sand, the whole structure is still going to collapse.
Yeah.
You have to build the entire foundation simultaneously.
Exactly. Which is easy if you are Goliath. If you are a massive, wealthy Chinese university hospital in a major city, you can easily hire a dedicated multidisciplinary committee. You have the budget to hit level 5 across the board.
Right. But what if you're David? What if you are a resource-constrained Chinese county-level hospital?
That's the real problem.
There was an article by Lu Tingguan in Chima highlighting this exact disparity, arguing that small rural hospitals cannot and honestly should not attempt to just copy the procedures of the massive urban centers.
They just don't have the manpower.
Right, because in some of these small county hospitals, you literally have one single person handling both the IT operations and the legal reviews for the entire facility.
Yeah, placing the burden of a level 5 HAIR framework on a single employee is impossible. It guarantees failure.
But let me push back on this a bit. If safety is truly the top priority, like the 2026 consensus explicitly states, shouldn't we force the small hospitals to have the exact same strict committees as the big ones?
It seems logical on paper, yeah.
Isn't having a 2-tier safety system inherently dangerous for the patients who happen to live near a smaller hospital? I mean, if I live in a rural area, I don't want the AI diagnosing my X-ray to have undergone less safety testing just because my local clinic has a smaller budget.
And this is a profound ethical collision. The World Health Organization actually laid out 6 ethical principles for AI in health to guide policymakers. 2 of those core principles are ensuring transparency and explainability and ensuring inclusiveness and equity.
So you want to fully understand how the AI makes its decisions, and you want everyone, regardless of where they live, to have access to the technology.
Exactly. But in the real world, those 2 principles are often completely at war with each other.
How so?
Well, if a government mandates incredibly complex, expensive oversight, constant red teaming, and multi-agent verification just to ensure perfect transparency, they completely price out the smaller hospitals. The rural clinics simply cannot afford the compliance costs.
Ah, I see.
So you end up denying AI access to underserved regions entirely. The patients in those areas get zero benefit from the technology. To achieve equity and inclusiveness, regulators often have to accept a differently structured, perhaps less resource-intensive oversight mechanism in those resource-constrained environments.
Man, that is a heavy realization. The safety rules literally change depending on your hospital's budget.
They have to.
Which makes you wonder how different governments are actually enforcing these rules. We've been focusing heavily on the Chinese landscape, but this tension between safety and access is a global headache. How are other countries handling it?
The international landscape is incredibly fragmented. If you look at the European Union, they operate under the GDPR, which requires explicit patient consent for processing sensitive health data, and they have the sweeping new AI Act.
Right.
In the United States, you have HIPAA, which mandates strict protection and privacy of protected health information. India completely reshaped its landscape with the Digital Personal Data Protection Act in 2023, along with their DSHA bill for digital health records.
And the major distinction here, according to the analysis, is that the EU, the U.S. and the Indian regulations are what we call hard law.
Yes.
They are official statutes passed by governments. If a hospital or a tech company breaks those rules, there are severe financial fines and actual legal sanctions.
Hard law has enforcement mechanisms built in.
But the Chinese expert consensus that we started this deep dive with, the document being passed around the Beijing Forum, that is considered soft law.
Exactly. It is a self-regulatory framework. Over 40 major institutions agreed to it, but there are no actual legal penalties for a Chinese hospital that decides to skip the multidisciplinary committee review because they are short-staffed.
No fines.
None. Their only risk is a loss of reputation and industry trust.
Okay, but if the Chinese consensus is just soft law without any teeth, why would a cash-strapped county hospital ever follow it? It sounds like a suggestion box, not a stop sign.
Well, trust is the ultimate currency in healthcare. A hospital simply cannot afford a public reputation for being reckless with experimental AI on their patients. But I will concede, because the consensus is non-binding soft law, it leaves room for massive variation.
Right. Some will go above and beyond and others won't.
Exactly. Some hospitals will be incredibly rigorous, building level 5 HERA frameworks, while others will do the absolute bare minimum to appear compliant.
And this variation isn't just about hospital size or national laws. It is deeply tied to global language and influence. There was a fascinating paper in Frontiers in Digital Health that analyzed discussions about medical AI on ex-formerly Twitter over a 3-year period.
Oh, right, the discourse analysis.
Yeah. They found that the global discourse shaping these AI norms is heavily, heavily skewed toward the English language.
Which connects directly to a point raised in an international consensus paper published in The Lancet Global Health. The researchers highlighted that voices from the Sinosphere, as well as experts from low-income countries and resource-constrained regions, are frequently entirely absent from these global regulatory discussions.
That's a huge blind spot.
It is. So the international rules being developed in Geneva or Washington might not reflect the actual realities on the ground in a rural Chinese county hospital or an Indian district clinic.
So if the small hospitals are struggling to follow the rules, and the rules in places like China are only soft law anyway, what is the ultimate barrier? If you peel back all the layers of ethical principles and committee mandates, what is actually stopping medical AI from being deployed in every single clinic tomorrow?
According to former lawmaker Kyungjin Kim's analysis, it comes down to the elephant in the room, money.
Always comes down to the budget, doesn't it?
The budget is always the final hurdle. The analysis points to the strategies of the major tech companies to explain this. We have to look at what the tech giants are doing right now, today, in the healthcare space. And an article in Xinhua Bao from January 21, 2026 laid it out perfectly. They are intentionally deferring monetization on their medical AI.
Let's look at the players involved here, because this is wild. You have Ant Group's Ant Apu, which is officially an ad-free health Q&A service, and they have firmly stated they will not let commercial rankings influence the medical answers.
Right.
Then you have the American company OpenAI Health, emphasizing extreme privacy and promising not to use sensitive user data for model training.
And in China, there's Alibaba Health's Hydrogen Ion, a physician assistant AI, openly stating they will not seek profits for 3 full years.
And JD Health's tool, GE, has no public timetable for revenue either. So these massive profit-driven companies are essentially giving incredibly expensive software away for free or operating at a massive loss. Why on earth would they do that?
It's an ecosystem lock-in strategy.
Lock-in. Okay, explain that.
These companies don't need the medical AI itself to turn a profit immediately. Think about it. JD Health can use a free diagnostic AI to drive users toward their highly profitable pharmaceutical e-commerce business.
Ah.
Ant Group operates a massive financial platform. Alibaba has a traditional e-commerce empire. The medical AI is a loss leader. It gets the hospital, the doctors, and the patients deeply embedded into the tech giant's broader digital ecosystem.
It's like a technology company coming to your house and offering you a state-of-the-art, completely free security system. It has lasers, cameras, facial recognition, the works.
All great. Right.
Yeah, but after a 3-year free trial, they hand you a massive monthly electric bill just to keep the system turned on. And because you've grown used to the security, you feel like you have to pay it. And you can't even prove to your accountant that the system stopped any break-ins.
Exactly. But hospitals don't have secondary e-commerce empires to subsidize those costs. When that 3-year free trial from the tech giant inevitably ends, the hospital's finance department is left staring at a massive subscription bill. And they have absolutely no idea what budget category to pull the money from.
Because there is no clear return on investment or ROI data. Even if you can prove the AI saves a doctor 10 minutes a day on paperwork, how does the hospital finance department put that save time on a balance sheet to justify a $1 million software subscription?
They can't. And furthermore, the AI usage fees aren't clearly reflected in the medical service reimbursement rates. Insurance companies are paying for the doctor's time and the physical x-ray. They are not paying for the AI that double-checked the x-ray.
And remember our discussion earlier about multi-agent cross-verification?
Oh, right.
The idea that because these agents hallucinate, you need multiple different AI models to check each other's work so they don't share the same blind spots. To actually do that safely, a hospital has to buy subscriptions from multiple different tech vendors simultaneously.
Yeah. You aren't just paying one massive electric bill. You're paying two or three.
Which means the resource-constrained county-level hospitals are immediately priced out of the safety mechanisms.
Exactly. The cost of just maintaining the oversight, paying the IT staff to run the silent trials, paying for the API access to keep the external databases updated for the RJ systems, paying the legal team to review the liability contracts, it makes the actual software look cheap by comparison.
It really does.
This is the biggest unresolved issue in all the literature reviewed in the analysis. Regulatory governance is mapping out the procedures, but absolutely no one is answering who will supply the funds to sustain these AI models long term.
So what does this all mean for you, the listener? We started this deep dive with that vivid scene of hospital IT workers passing around the expert consensus rulebook in Beijing.
Yeah, the blueprint.
Right. And what we have discovered is that while the medical world finally has the blueprints for how to safely monitor unpredictable genius-level AI, the construction costs are being completely ignored. We have incredibly strict rules, but we have absolutely no budget. We were moving out of the era of the predictable toaster and into the era of the autonomous genius intern. But nobody knows who is signing the intern's paychecks once the grant money and the free trials run out.
We have collectively built a magnificent, complex regulatory engine, but we haven't figured out where the fuel is coming from.
Which leaves us with a pretty heavy thought to ponder as we wrap up today.
Yeah.
Think about those underserved hospitals, you know, the rural clinics where one person is doing both the IT and the legal work.
The ones that are already struggling.
Exactly. When those 3-year free trials from the massive tech giants inevitably expire, what happens to the patients who have started relying on that AI for early cancer detection or rapid diagnosis?
That's the real question.
What happens if their local hospital simply cannot afford to pay the massive subscription fee to keep the AI turned on? Will life-saving medical AI become a luxury subscription service that only elite big city hospitals can maintain, leaving everyone else behind?
It's definitely something we all need to be paying attention to.
For sure. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive into the source material. As we've seen today, the most important mechanisms shaping our healthcare aren't just the flashy algorithms, they're the budget lines and the committee meetings hidden behind the scenes. Keep questioning the systems working in your own life, and we will catch you next time.
This program is provided by Lawyer Kyungjin Kim.